listening to Fancy Ramen, a podcast about video games and other forms of media. I'm Neil.
I'm Cookie.
And I'm Scott.
And
feels if you had more for this intro.
Yeah, I just don't necessarily know where I wanted to go with it first, but what have you guys been up to this week?
Well, I took a drive to Colorado. Yeah, it was fun. It was fun. That's a long drive.
It's kind of a boring drive going through western Nebraska.
Well, because I am assuming you went to Denver, correct?
Correct.
Yeah. As soon as you hit Denver, the environment starts to get slightly more interesting, but you've already reached your destination.
Yep.
The wind dies down a lot.
Yeah. It's 8 hours of kind of endless driving, and then the last hour is a little bit of elevation change and bumps and hills, and it's at least nice, but by that point you're burnt out. So
speaking of 8 hours of endless driving, we're gonna circle back to that later.
Okay, nice. Sounds good.
When I used to go out to Colorado a lot since I have family there, and one of my cousins who is maybe not the most careful driver would make that trip into about 6 hours. She also flipped her car once. She's living and perfectly fine before I say anything else. She flipped her car into a ditch once, and the ditch is, or was, still is, I guess. It's not like they filled the ditch, pretty deep, like deep enough for three cars to flip into. But
she has two cars to go.
She managed to flip her car onto a pipe, I think, and like this pipe that was running across the ditch prevented her car from plummeting further into the ditch. If I remember correctly, so pretty
lucky.
Yeah,
I had a friend who flipped her car, and to this day, I still don't understand how she did it, because it was just on like a residential street, and there didn't seem to be anything that would promote car flipping to it.
When you're going 60 miles an hour taking that 45 degree turn, okay, that's what happens.
You mean 90 degree turn?
It could be 90 even. Yeah.
Oh gosh,
I don't think she made the 90 degrees. Like, she got halfway through the turn.
She got 45.
Bam. What about you, Scott?
Let's see, it was Sierra's birthday this week, and so I treated her to kind of hanging out all day, doing a bit of shopping together, and then we went out to dinner and saw a movie last night. And of course, when you really want to treat someone special to the best day you possibly can, you take them to the best movie you can possibly go see, and that is
Wonder. You guys want to go see Wonder?
It was a special showing of The Room at our local theater. That's more or less like an analog for those more like limited screen indie theaters that we have in Omaha.
It's
like
a hipster,
not film
theater.
Yeah. Oh yeah. Less film streams, more like Dundee Theater. You know, places where you'd go to see a showing of the Rocky Horror Picture Show, and people are all involved.
Wait,
like, we had people sitting in the aisles and just like hanging out on the walls because it was so packed watching this absolute masterpiece of a film.
So why has The Room just recently popped up everywhere again?
So it's resurfaced because there's a movie coming out called The Disaster Artist.
I think it's already out even.
Yeah.
Yeah, it may already be out. James Franco plays Tommy Wiseau making his film The Room, and it's essentially a comedy film tribute to one of the best unintentional comedy films of all time, The Room. And if you haven't seen it, like, it's just really hard not to talk about it and spoil all of the wonderful lines. But it's the only thing I know Tommy Wiseau from, so I can't really comment on him too much. But the movie that he ends up putting together is the most like horrible, just like synthesis. It's a terrible, terrible movie, and for some reason that makes it so good.
There's a sincerity and like a legitimate effort to make it a good movie.
So short.
Yeah. So it's not like Kung Fu Hustle or like movies that were designed to be bad.
Yeah. It's one that tried to be like a pretty, I'd say probably a pretty sincere drama.
Yeah, absolutely.
yeah, culminating in a really dramatic ending, but instead it is such a like laughable shit show that practically every line in the script is a quotable one-liner, and the whole movie just has you completely reeling because there's like a very poorly cohesive plot. And so you really just have no idea what's going on, and the film's over, and you're just hit with the absurdity of it. And it is just the best comedic impact unintentionally.
The Disaster Artist really suffers as a movie if you do not know what The Room is or have not seen The Room.
I think you absolutely have to see The Room to appreciate a movie about it, because otherwise you would just think that The Disaster Artist is a movie about a weird guy making a bad movie, and that's not necessarily the only context you need to really appreciate it.
The production value in The Room is also surprisingly good, but it's not, like, for the time span it was made, it's not good enough to look like it was extremely well done, but it's also not bad enough to look like it was an amateur or indie film. Like, real money was put into this product, and...
So, is this one of those type of movies that I'll only like if I like movies like Rocky Horror Picture Show and stuff?
No, I think...
It's not like that, yeah.
Yeah, Rocky Horror Picture is kind of more of like, it's got more of those cult weird things going on. I was going to say like cult classic-y sort of.
I think it absolutely qualifies as a cult classic.
But The Room is not a cult classic in that same way.
Well, cult classic usually implies underappreciated and like underrated, critically received film.
Where I guess this is not a cult classic then, because it's not that people that like the movie it's not that the movie is underappreciated. I think they appreciate that it's not good.
It's absolutely overappreciated if you really get into the details of it. But it's so damn good. It's so good, Cookie. It's, I think, worth renting and watching sometime. Just know, the only thing you need to know when you're getting into it is that it's a bad movie. don't expect any redeeming qualities from it. It was Sierra's first time seeing it when we saw it last night, and she turned to me after maybe only 15 minutes of the movie playing. She's like, I couldn't even fathom it actually being this bad. And I was just like, you know, buckle your seatbelts. It's about to be a wild ride here.
So I watched it recently because I plan on seeing the Disaster Artist, which I'm assuming you're going to at some point too. Yeah.
Yes, absolutely. This has only like reinvigorated my interest in it.
I would say that the one fault that The Room has is that it's not constantly delivering you bad cheesy lines. Like, there are good durations of time up to 10 minutes where nothing is happening and it's boring. But I
watching
think,
it with the theater audience definitely changes that.
Yeah,
I should say, because there's also maybe 4 football scenes in this movie that are just laughably bad, but they're so much better with an audience kind of heckling. And then there's 4 or 4.5 like sex scenes that go on way too long that are also laughably bad with an audience, but otherwise like pretty uncomfortable and cringeworthy if you're watching like on your own.
If it's your first time watching, I think you might enjoy just the experience of it, like if you and Lizzie watch it. But I also was having troubles just retaining my focus on the movie since I've seen it a couple times at this point. Speaking of movies that we are planning to go see, Cookie, you've seen one in particular that we'll be talking about later this week.
Indeed, I have. That's one of the things we did in Colorado. Is we're like, okay, what are we doing tonight? I'm like, we keep hearing about these botanical garden lights. That sounds nice. We should go do that. That was sold out. That's sold out for like the next week and a half in Denver.
Wow.
Botanical gardens. The lights, they're really pretty, apparently. Couldn't get in. So we're like, well, we're right by this movie theater. Let's try and go see Star Wars.
Episode 8.
The Last Jedi.
So that means this is the last episode, right? Like episode 9, not going to happen. No Jedi. Doesn't matter.
Pretty much. I'm not allowed to say much, but what I will say is I enjoyed it. Lizzie actually enjoyed it.
Is she not a big fan?
No. Nope. Not at all. I don't think she's seen the original trilogy. And if so, she probably only saw them once, like a long, long time ago in a galaxy far, far away.
So without spoiling anything, because we will be doing a proper spoiler episode here shortly. And I also haven't even seen episode 7, although I do know of some of the main plot points that happen.
You haven't seen episode 7
at all? I have not, and I haven't seen Rogue One, so...
Oh, well, you can watch Rogue One on Netflix. It's
episode 7's on Netflix, too, I think.
I don't think so.
We don't need to fact check it. It's okay. Yeah. I'll find a way to watch it.
Well, I'm just curious now.
More importantly, though, so Carrie Fisher obviously passed away during the production of episode 8. Does she have a big role in this movie as a result of that?
She's got a decent size role, and she actually passed away after she finished filming all of her portions.
Oh, really?
Okay. So they lucked out there. So there weren't
way
any...
to hang in there.
So were they talking about?
So there weren't any.
Were they talking about episode 9 where they might have to use CG to introduce her into that movie then, or?
I'm thinking so, and I'm thinking they may just like kill her off or something. I don't know what they're planning on doing with her.
Well, you know why they trapped Han Solo in carbon, whatever the hell.
Carbonite.
And The Empire Strikes Back. They did that because they weren't sure if he would be on for episode 6.
Let's just sideline this character in carbonite, and we may or may not thaw him out.
Pretty much.
Actually, I don't know how that pertains. It's not like they were worried that, oh, Carrie Fisher might not be in for episode 9.
Pretty much.
Like, had she lived, she would have been a part of it.
And for a second, I thought, oh, okay. Oh, this makes sense. And then I was like, oh, okay. I guess that makes sense. Oh, wait. One thing I do want to say. Sound design. Excellent.
In what regard? Is it just that, like, it sounded like original Star Wars, or...
No, it sounded like it was a movie with good sound design, and okay. I'm glad they ditched the director they had for the last...
J.J. Abrams is out.
Thank God.
Wait, so was Agreed. 7 bad on the sound design?
It's not great.
It's not great, but he also had some very, very flawed designs that he wanted to stick with.
How do you fuck up the sound of a movie that has a bunch of sound effects?
No, not in the sound design, like in his direction style of the last episode. Very flawed when his thing was, I can't quote it off directly because I don't remember exactly what he said, but it was pretty much like, Star Wars fans like to have more questions than answers. I'm setting this up to have lots of questions, and we're just like, what the fuck is going on?
That's not true. I feel like the majority of Star Wars fans... at least within our range, obviously, know who Darth Vader is, for instance, before they even start watching the movies.
Correct. So. It wasn't like, so whereas the old Star Wars movies were all like, okay, these just happen to become subsequent questions of who is Darth Vader really to Luke, whereas J.J. Abrams was like, ooh, mystery character here, who is Snoke? Mystery character here. Who is this? Who are Rey's parents?
Yeah, no, you're absolutely right, because the question of who Darth Vader is happens in The Empire Strikes Back, and it's answered in that same movie.
Correct. Whereas J.J. Abrams was like, yeah, let's set all these questions up. That was his, like, that was like one interview that I read that I was like, that's dumb. Makes sense as to why this movie was kind of eh. But this new one was much better, and... the sound design for this new one is just like, there's some scenes where you're just like, oh, like there was an audible gasp during one section of the movie. And it was like at the perfect point. It's just like lots of things are going on. And then it was like, everyone's just like, oh. And the sound design is just beautiful.
I'm kind of looking forward to it.
I'm looking forward to it. Talking about it in spoilery detail. I do have some questions, but we'll get there. We'll get there. So what'd you see?
I watched it on Netflix, so not a movie theater per se, but I think I've discovered my favorite documentary of all time. And not from the standpoint of it being a topic that interests me the most or anything like that. But this documentary is called Imposter, and it is a retelling of a true story back in 97, or technically it starts out in 1994, when a boy by the name of Nicholas Barclay goes missing in Texas. And a few years pass, and suddenly this Nicholas Barclay resurfaces in Spain, apparently as a victim of a sex ring, manages to escape his captors, and his sister, or his sister from Texas, ends up going to Spain, verifying his identity, and brings him back. This isn't really much of a spoiler, because they open up with this note, but this is not Nicholas Barclay. This is some 23-year-old who Nicholas would, at this point in time, be 17 or 16. This 23-year-old Frenchman, who is somehow passed as this blonde Caucasian boy, and Imposter basically tells the story of how and why this happened, and also brings up possible explanations to the actual Nicholas Barclay's disappearance. But the editing and the storytelling is so fantastically done, and the story itself is basically like better than a Hollywood plot. I was basically watching this movie sitting like, at the edge of my seat the entire time, and I would recommend anyone to watch this if they have any curiosity into real crime, I guess.
True crime?
Real true crime, true mysteries. It's an unsolved case, by the way, at this point, but by the end of it, like, Tiffany and I just were filled with so many questions about what could have happened. And I think we also both, part of the movie, I guess you could say, involves the audience being fooled by this serial impersonator. Or imposter, I guess you could say. So I would recommend watching it. It's about an hour and a half long. Super interesting.
What's it called one more time?
Imposter. Mm. You can find it on Netflix.
Cool. Unlike Star Wars Episode 8.
7, you mean?
7.
He's not right with Star Wars Episode 8.
Oh,
well, that's true.
Episode 8, yeah.
Have you guys been playing any video games?
So, I have been playing a video game. Just a little bit. Got about 20 minutes into this video game, then I couldn't anymore. So I mentioned 8-hour drive and how that is. So I've been playing Desert Bus VR. Or at least a couple of minutes of Desert Bus VR.
So, I'm familiar with Desert Bus, the original game. It was part of like the Penn & Teller game collection, which is basically a bunch of games that you could use to cheat and swindle your friends with. And Desert Bus has like a notoriety on the internet for being a streamed game that people do. They play Desert Bus to completion, usually for charities and so forth.
Mm-hmm.
Now, Desert Bus looks really shitty, at least the original form of it. Did they do like any sort of graphical improvements for Desert Bus VR?
Yes. So Gearbox Studios picked it up and they published it. And there's like a little documentary that's playing on the radio during the game of Desert Bus. They're talking about basically like they actually bought the bus and scanned it in, so you get the full VR of the beauty that is Desert Bus. So for those who don't know, Desert Bus is a game where you're playing for points. One point is a full shift. Shifts happen in real time. And if you've worked anywhere before in your life, a shift is 8 hours. You are driving a bus from, I think it's like Nevada to Las Vegas or something, somewhere to Las Vegas. And there are no stops. There are no like NPCs to interact with. It's just you on this empty highway driving straight. And the bus pulls to the right. If you find yourself not focusing in the bus pulling to the right, if you're off-road for too long, you'll be towed back to your original spot in real time. The bus pulls to the right. But apparently during this documentary, they were talking about, I forget who mentioned this, but some like president's wife or some high official's wife was like, oh yeah, we should teach our children how to do work and like have jobs and things using video games. That'd be really cool. So that's actually where Desert Bus originated from, because they were like, hey, let's do this 8-hour shift of this mundane job. So after Gearbox picked it up, they were like, okay, let's make other games. So they like shot out ideas like Toll Collector. And then the one that actually really stuck out to me was Bird Watcher, that they had to veto that because that'd be far too interesting. That actually made me laugh. But yeah, so you're on this bus and it pulls to the right. There's not much to do. You can open the door. You can open and close the door. You can kind of look around the bus, but you're just there in this bus driving straight for 8 hours.
Wait, are you sure that's how Desert Bus was made? Because I'm pretty sure it was part of, it came about from the Penn and Teller collection known as Penn and Teller's Smoke and Mirrors.
Not 100%. I was only half paying attention at this point during this documentary. So, you know, take everything I say today with a grain of salt. I'll tell you more about it later.
So is the documentary long enough to fill up the entire trip?
No.
Okay.
No.
I was going to say that's a really long documentary at that point.
About 8 hours?
Something like that, yeah.
No, I don't believe it is. But it's actually a pretty interesting listen. I was like, okay, this is cool.
Have you ever played the, or heard about the game like Summer Car Project or My Summer Car, something like that?
Nope.
It's a game where you do a lot of monotonous jobs as a way to fund your project for that summer, which is to build a car. And you have to do a lot of mundane stuff when you're trying to drive and build the car, obviously, too. But stuff like, you know, you have to find the headlight control and turn it on manually and that sort of shit. So in Desert Bus VR, is it a lot of like small mundane, small mundane controls, or how does that work then?
So one of your controllers is a hand that you can use to grip the steering wheel and make sure you're not drifting to the right.
Mm-hmm.
One controller has, you pull the trigger to do gas. There's a button to switch which controller is the gas and which controller is the hand. And if your free hand is on your right side, you can look over and open the door to the bus. You can close it.
Why would you need to open it?
You don't. You can, though. There's not much else to do, okay, Neil?
Yeah, that's true.
And if your left hand is free, you can turn the radio on and off. And yes, it did get a graphical overhaul, as I'm seeing original things of Desert Bus.
Yeah, it's pixely, and looks like shit. I do want to clarify that the streams that you would see with Desert Bus are called Desert Bus for Hope.
Mm-hmm.
So, what have you been playing, Scott?
Oh, I've just been continuing on my completionist speed run of Legend of Zelda: Link to the Past. And I just got curious and looked up what a speedrun time runs for that game, playing it on its console version for the Super Nintendo. And I just want you guys to guess how long it takes the best people in the world to beat it, and then how long it'll probably take me to beat it.
I don't know about how long it'd take you, but I'm guessing maybe 45 minutes.
It's like 1 hour 30, I think, for the best players. And I found that, surprisingly, this game seems very accessible to actually speedrun. Because when I compared the amount of time it took me to get the first 3 medallions in the game versus what the world record for the fastest speed for getting the medallions, I was only off by like 10 minutes. So,
doable.
Yeah, this game is like, this is the first time I've ever felt somewhat competent in a game.
Assuming it's because it's a part that you've played enough in the past,
man,
that you're somewhat familiar with it.
I am very familiar with A Link to the Past. I am tearing through this game. Like, I can probably estimate that each dungeon takes me about, and we're talking about the later dungeons after you get your pendants, probably takes me 20 minutes for most so far. And so I can sit down for an hour and complete like a third of the game, which is really the pace I've been running at. I did the third, fourth, and fifth palaces all within like an hour and a half yesterday, though my timer's a little off because every once in a while I'll pause the game to go like complete a task, run an errand, or like change over my laundry. So a bunch of times getting plugged on that I'm not actually using it.
Right.
But it's on the Super Nintendo it's on the Mini SNES's like playtime clock. But I gotta say, going back and playing over a game like this that's short enough is really a pretty satisfying experience. I may go back and play some more old games after this, just because I realize if I'm very familiar with them, I can get through them in so little time that I really don't have to worry about the investment necessarily. And I do also probably think that my appreciation for the game has grown playing it again years later. It's still a good game. It's one of the few Zeldas, I think, that even after I complete it now, if I wait another 10 years, I could go back and play it again and still enjoy it and still think that like it's aged perfectly fine graphically and the controls are fine. Just very positive experience. I'm very surprised.
I don't know if I could necessarily say that that's one of the few Zelda games I could go back to, but that's probably still my favorite game.
Oh, okay. I was going to say, which ones could you go back to? Because I think I can go back and do Ocarina of Time or Majora's Mask whenever. Like, I really loved those games. Those were really the... They weren't my first Zelda games, but they were the ones that I spent the most amount of time with and have the most nostalgia for.
I thought Twilight Princess was pretty concise as an experience. Like, there might be a few parts that I would have some issues replaying, but Ocarina as well. Granted, some of the temples are really annoying. And Wind Waker. I could definitely play that again. I think that may be my second or third favorite Zelda at this point.
See, I could see replaying Wind Waker up until you actually have to gather the Triforce.
So those aren't as bad if you play the remaster on Wii U, because I think they cut down the number of Triforce pieces.
That's nice.
How many Triforce pieces can there be?
There's like nine.
Yeah, they're like broken up. So it's
they're scattered across the map.
So it's not some just of them are three terrible. Anymore.
Yeah, and some of them are terrible. Well, no, it's a bunch of Triforce pieces, I think, to get one piece of the Triforce.
Yeah, that's right. That's right. Sorry.
Yeah, the Triforce of Courage broken into nine. So really, if you had to field all three like triangles, that's 21 pieces. Too much.
Gotta catch them all.
Yeah.
Triforce.
But I don't know. I don't actually have that much to say about it. That just happens to be the game that I've put my time into. And I've been playing a little bit more Metal Gear Solid. I'm actually getting comfortable with the African region now that I've played in it a little bit more.
That's the more forested one, right?
Yeah, that's it's the Angola-Zaire border region, I believe. I like it a little bit more than the desert, just because there's like Afghanistan's actually really cool, and I thought a great choice of a location to be at. But I do like it just having a little bit more like flora around, and the area is a lot more difficult to like drive around and traverse. It feels more expansive, even though it's not. I think the map size is relatively the same, but because you have more things in it, and a harder to traverse like back roads or off roads areas, it seems really massive.
I'm excited that you brought up the African map, because that means you're starting to get to the point of the game where I actually feel Metal Gear Solid 5 starts to become a good or great game.
Because before that, it was just Ground Zeroes in the desert.
I would say it plays better than Ground Zeroes, but
right,
the story starts going in awesome directions.
Good to hear. I think I have all my buddies now, and I have enough research completed that I actually have some customizability to what I'm doing. Like, I'm trying to take a more and more non-lethal approach the more my technology develops.
Your hands are already stained, Scott.
Oh,
may as well
so,
keep killing people.
So bloody. Yeah. And I've also gotten a lot more proficient at the game too. I've gotten my first couple of ratings in the A's and S's without having to resort to using. I try not to use any items that will reduce my mission ranking to A for the maximum. But I've had to, I've used the helicopter in maybe one or two situations, and so
Scott,
yes,
I honestly completely forgot about something that is built into the game. It's kind of a minor thing, but have you noticed your shrapnel getting any bigger?
No, I can't tell. I've been focusing on it too. Like, I've been looking to see if my shrapnel gets more and more intense, because I figured it might be a Mass Effect 2 style thing where I get more breaching of my shrapnel if I'm very violent.
Yeah, it's definitely a mechanic. It will grow in size and get more intense.
So is it because of my kill count just reaching thresholds, or is it a ratio that I can overwhelm by going completely non-lethal?
I don't know if it's a ratio. I think,
how do I get a pretty face, Neil?
You might not be able to at this point. No, if it hasn't changed, you might still be fine. But like, and again, I'm not promising that I know how it works, but I think it's based on like a meter that raises depending on how many people you've killed, and also maybe how many times you get detected. I think the idea is that
better,
the legend,
then it also goes in.
What's that?
Are you saying then if I'm better at the game in general, that will also help with reducing my shrapnel?
I don't think it reduces, but that, I mean, we could just look it up real quick.
Yeah, it might be worth that, because now I'm curious. But also the other issue is I don't want to read anything on a Wikipedia that's going to spoil too much of the ending for me.
Yeah, so you don't look at it, but I will look into it. So there are three levels. It looks like there's a point system where if you get 20,000 of these points, you will have a cutscene, which I apparently never saw this, because I never saw the cutscene. And if you hit 50,000, it will be even more. We'll say the changes are even more permanent. So you can lower those points by extracting animals, earning certain achievements, extracting. No, I guess I shouldn't read that. Or visiting a certain place at your mother base once it's been built. Do enough nice things and Snake's horn will shrink again, and the permanent thing that you can have happen will also be removed. You can also lower your points as many times as you like, though it's purely aesthetic. And you can't stab people with the horn.
Oh, that's too bad. No headbutts for me.
No. Man, I completely forgot that was a thing. But yeah, extracting animals is probably the most common thing you can do to lower it. But I don't think there's any reason not to have it high, so you may as well experience that for yourself.
Sounds good.
As for me, I've been... Are there any other games for you?
No, that's about it. Those are the two I've been focusing on. Though I realize I need to really focus on finishing Dishonored 2 before we get to our Game of the Year discussions at the end of the year, because it could be a contender, but I need to beat the game to be sure. We can talk about it once I actually have it completed, and I'd love to talk about it too if you end up picking it up, because it's an excellent game.
I'll have to watch for it. I really did enjoy the first one. Let's say we cover some emails. If you want to write into us, you can write us at podcast@fancyramen.com. This first one comes from Dave. He writes, "Hello, Ramen Club. I'm surprised that there was not much fanfare for Mega Man 11 or anything other than a mention of the new Soul Calibur. I love playing the original Soul Calibur in my dorm room with floor mates, and while I have not been as enthusiastic about the following titles, I'm ecstatic to see the series return to the original time frame. On an unrelated note, the holidays are almost almost upon us. I was wondering if you guys had any specific games you like to revisit or associate with this time of year, even if there are no direct connections to the festivities."
Ace Combat is a game that I associate with this time of year.
The entire series?
Basically. My man.
Basically. And that's only because back when we used to live in Georgia, we would have large parties of friends and family members and friends of family come over, and we'd play like Ace Combat, do dogfighting, and we'd play rival schools.
Dogfighting, oh, like you would have dogs fight each other?
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
No. Yeah. No, yeah, we'd have we'd set up our own like little rules for the dogfights as well. It's like, okay, if you run out of rockets, you've got to crash into a kill yourself. Because no one wants to watch a dogfight.
No one's good
with,
enough to use the Gatling gun.
No one wants to watch that fight anymore.
Oh man, that sounds like so much fun. I would love that.
Well, good news. Ace Combat 8, 9, 10, 11, 12.
What?
I'm shocked that there are that many games now.
The new Ace Combat that's coming out?
There's a new Ace Combat coming out, and I wasn't paying attention.
Yeah, man, it's going to have PSVR support and everything.
That's cool.
Now oh my
god.
You
can vomit at high velocity.
Well, this definitely changes one of my responses to a another email that we got.
Oh, I would also...
Seven's the game that's about to come out.
Yeah, 7.
I'd also note that I just kind of forgot about Mega Man 11 being announced, or maybe that happened on Monday. I don't really remember.
I didn't really care either way.
Yeah, I'm not really big on Mega Man. And like 9 and 10, I think were kind of like retro-y in the way they were made. So when I heard 11 was out, I just kind of thought, oh, but it's actually going to be 3D. So it's like they're doing exactly what Mighty No. 9 did.
Mm.
And for better or worse, we'll see how that goes for them.
Yeah, I also hope we didn't give the impression that we were glossing over Soul Calibur because it's not important, because I've got some great memories of Soul Calibur 2 and Soul Calibur 4. I used to play a lot of 4 in college, and awesome memories of that game.
What was the one that has like Darth Vader and all them?
That's 4.
Oh, yeah, that was a good one.
It was a really good one.
Lincoln
I will always
bombs.
Have a soft spot in my heart for that one in particular, even though I really liked Soul Calibur 2. Because I introduced somebody to playing the game who hadn't played a Soul Calibur before, and it turned out that they were just like a complete savant at it, or they hustled me really well. Because I played this person, and after a couple of games of like them just trying to figure out the controls and the idea behind it, I think I consistently lost to them for the rest of my like college career playing against them. Shout out to Drew, you're better than I am. I wish I could have beat you.
Nice.
I didn't realize Soul Calibur is a 7 or 6. I don't even remember.
It's 6.
It's actually going to take place during Soul Calibur 1.
Oh, I didn't realize that either.
Yeah.
Which, I mean, I don't understand the story of Soul Calibur whatsoever. So it meant nothing to me that they were returning back.
Wait,
to...
so does that mean, what's his name's going to be? So we're not going to have Siegfried and Nightmare running around at this point?
Well, Soul Calibur 1 had both characters unlockable anyways, yeah. But technically from the story, Nightmare existed and not Siegfried, but you could play as Siegfried, I think.
Oh, because Siegfried's already been corrupted by the time
exactly.
Soul Calibur 1.
Yeah.
Okay.
But like that also means I'm assuming a return of that cast, and that would be cool. Sophie Tia is going to be in it, I know for sure, and I don't think I liked any version of Sophie Tia after her. Like, you know, she has kids and stuff, which are the characters you'd play as in the later Soul Calibers.
You didn't like the later versions of her? You didn't like Mom Bod Sophie Tia?
If it's not Lizard Man or Sophie Tia, then nope.
I was a big fan of Taki and Talum.
Taki's the ninja with the unrealistic wetsuit.
Sunfons?
Yeah.
You know what I'm talking about, right?
Yeah.
Like, why? Whatever, it doesn't matter. I think the costume design was terrible, but I thought she was a good character.
Oh shit, speaking of costume design, correction from last week. Recovery of MMO Addict is not done.
That was actually an OVA. Did you look at Master Anime?
No.
So that
the
was,
part 1 and part 2.
Yep. Episode 11
part 1 and
showed
part
up as a OVA, so to speak. So like the series, at least as it is right now, is over. That was a special edition. I know, I got excited too because I saw episode 11 on Master Anime, but then I went back later and discovered that had been rebranded as like a special OVA or something.
Oh, but the reason I mentioned that is because in part of that OVA, one of the outfits that the main character has to wear will defeat the Demon King immediately. And it's a skimpy bikini armor piece.
And she refuses to wear it. So someone else wears it instead.
And the hilarity ensues.
Yep. As for holiday games, do you have something for that, Scott?
Oh, yeah. My holiday game has always been Pokemon Yellow. I remember receiving it as a kid for my birthday in the fall. And by the time Christmas rolled around and I was on vacation back here in Montana, I was finally able to beat the Elite Four, and I have incredibly fond memories of being a stupid child who made the worst possible team of Pokemon to beat the Elite Four. My team included, but was not limited to, Charizard and Electrode and Articuno. And that was the whole team I used to beat them the first time, and I still laugh thinking about how I was able to do it through like sheer force of will and a lot of... Is it Ether that returns the
pee-pee?
Power points to your Pokemon? Yeah,
it returns the their pee-pee.
Yeah.
I used one of the THs. What the hell were they called?
HMs. TMs? Probably HMs or TMs.
TMs, because HM are the ones that HM's you have to use permanent. To like move around the map as well, but it's also
yes.
a move.
But they're normally garbage moves.
So I taught Charizard Slash, which is like a neutral or physical decent attack.
He learns that on his own.
Does he?
Yes.
Hmm. I beg, maybe they, I don't know. I want to call bullshit on that, at least for the original, but I really don't care enough to check.
I'll double check you. Keep talking.
But so Slash is neutral, so it works on a lot of things except for rock and whatever for the original. And I just fucking use Charizard for everything. And the way that game levels characters, Pokemon up, even if you're over leveled, if you're killing like boss battles and stuff with that Pokemon, it will level up on its own relatively high. And I just powered through like the entire game of Charizard. Because why?
Charizard learns Slash at level 36.
Fuck. Maybe I didn't use a TM then. I don't know.
I don't know if there's a Slash TM.
Yeah, I could be wrong. Anywho,
there is not. You are wrong.
Ooh!
That means you don't have to send in corrections on that, hey?
That's right. I'm just trying to do the work for our listeners.
The proactive job.
Yeah.
I don't think I have like a specific holiday game. Like the closest thing I could think of would be, I don't know, it's more of a genre, but this time of year when I was not working... like retail or anything, I would just play a lot of RPGs. Like this is yeah. the time of year where you plow through it. So okay, like the one that really comes to mind is Final Fantasy VII. When that was released, it was right around Christmas when I was however old I was, and I got through. I don't remember if I beat it over that course of one holiday break or winter break, but I was probably pretty close.
Gotcha.
Our next email comes in anonymously, and he references, he or she, I guess I should say, references a it even. It could be a it could be a bot from Russia.
What about a yeah. we? Could be a hive mind.
Oh, yeah. You're right.
Man, I didn't even get to talk about... Can I just very quickly, before we hit this email, explain why my team is such a fond memory?
I sure, guess.
Sure. I know. It seems like such a waste of time, but I just... Like
nothing's a waste of time in this podcast.
I always laugh thinking about it, and it always reminds me as to why I don't play Pokemon anymore. Is because ultimately I am actually bad at that game. But so I gave you a team that had a fire type, an ice type, an electric type, and I too, Neil, had to use the overpower your Charizard in order to win the game
because
if I remember
against rock, right?
Well. I had an 8-year-old brain or something close to that. And so I just decided that the best possible strategy was buying a bunch of revives and a bunch of ethers so I could use Electrode and self-destruct on any Pokemon that Charizard couldn't beat.
Wait, that actually seems pretty legit to me.
It totally works. It's very expensive.
Should name your Electrode Kamikaze. Just call it a day.
I didn't, but...
It's also alarming because there's no way to get unlimited money in Pokemon.
Yeah, it's very difficult in the Generation 1. You have to fight the Elite Four, win some money from them, get knocked out, spend that, like, hoard that money until you can spend a bunch. So I lost to the Elite Four many more times than I've ever won against the Elite Four.
Oh, so that's the way. Because, like, in theory, there is a set amount of money you can get from those early games.
Yeah. Right, that's right. Until you reach the Elite Four, who are the only trainers that you can battle a second time. Until you beat them, of course, and beat the whole thing. Well, actually, no, you can continue to beat them over and over and over again. But so Electrode with self-destruct and revives in Aethers to bring that back up whenever he's unable to do the trick. And then a Charizard equipped with the moveset of, what is it? It was Cut, Strength, Fly, and Fire Blast. And so if I remember correctly, it was Fire Blast against Lori or whoever the first ice and water type person is. It was Fire Blast against all the ice types, or like Strength, and then against our rock type guy Articuno until Articuno would die, and then Charizard's Strength doing not very effective damage, and Electrode. Then against Agatha, who has mostly ghost type, you can't use Electrode at all, who was probably dead 6 or 7 times by then anyway. So I used Fly against her entire team because it's a flying type move. And then for Lance, I think I'd revive Articuno, and Articuno and Electrode would bring us home, and then just Charizard's overwhelming strength against Gary. Truly the best tactical approach to beating that game possible.
I mean, really, my mentality is that the least amount of effort necessary to beat an RPG is probably the best route to go. So, like, yeah, it might have been an expensive route, but once you have the money, you may as well do it, because who's not going to use the Phoenix Down on the undead dragon?
Yeah, well, and the other thing is, too, though, is, like, I'm a stubborn, dumb child with a lot of time to play a video game over the Christmas break, so the three Pokemon I was using... or I were using, you know, we'd get defeated in battle, but they'd probably level up quite a bit. So I must have probably raised, I think Charizard was hitting 80 by the time we finally beat the Elite Four. Electrode was in the 60s and Articuno was somewhere up in the 70s range. So when in doubt, grind it out on those older games. And that's all I have to say about that.
And that's all I have to say about that. All right, our next email comes in from Anonymous, or it's an anonymous email. References one that they sent a couple weeks ago. I guess I'll just say. I wrote in a couple weeks ago to answer your question from that email. What Wii U exclusive was I buying it for? Twilight Princess. I do admit to picking up Wind Waker again, but I had that on GameCube before, and fuck playing Breath of the Wild on that. Question: in this era of shameless remakes and remasters, what game or series do you want to see revisited? Who wants to go first?
Scott does.
Okay, sounds good. I wrote just a quick rapid fire response while I was thinking about what games I want to play, and already Ace Combat was on that list. I had it in order from, like, the most wanted to that'd be nice, and Ace Combat was on that'd be nice, but that dream's already come true in the short time of recording this podcast. So that's great. I love that game. I'm glad that they're revisiting it again. There's always room for at least one good fighter pilot game with sometimes an exceptional storyline, and other times not. But I'd love to see some revisiting to Chrono Trigger, Chrono Cross. Wonderful, wonderful games that I could easily play more of. Custom Robo, Jet Set Radio. All three of those could use a little bit more time in the spotlight.
With the amount that Square Enix seems to shut down Chrono Trigger projects, you would hope they were doing something, but they're Definitely not.
But they might just like stamping those out.
Yeah. I'd agree with you on Chrono Trigger, like the Chrono series in general, that elusive Chrono break, which will never happen if only it would. I would say Bushido Blade. I would love a remake of that game. I guess that there are two games. The second one has a sort of arcadiness to it, whereas the first one felt maybe a little more like refined, but either of those games or a third game would be awesome. I'd also really enjoy seeing Suikoden, a remake of the second one, or just the series continued. It's probably not going to happen because Konami owns it. Fuck Konami. What about you, Cookie?
I think a lot of my dreams are actually coming true. So, I was thinking, what would I like to replay? And I was like, Zone of the Enders would be a good game to replay, but then they announced that last year, so that's coming to PC and PSVR.
Another Kojima production, too.
Mm-hmm. Then, Ace Combat, they're redoing that. I would really like another Rival Schools. That'd be nice.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Rival Schools would be nice.
That was also fucking awesome.
Also, they're redoing 2D Dragon Ball Z fighting game, so that's also nice.
You mean like the SNES ones?
Mm-hmm. So the new Dragon Ball Z FighterZ that's coming out soon.
But that's totally not 2D or it's like 2D. The original 2D ones where you could actually, and maybe you can do this, but it seems like that game is more of like your traditional Fighter format. Whereas the old SNES ones, I remember, you could literally just use your top buttons to like do your runs, if you will. You would just like dart across the opposite end of the screen and just
and
have
like super fly away.
And yeah, you can't do fireball that in this one. Wars constantly.
You cannot do that in this one. Man, I miss that.
Yeah, I know. But you'd have to charge up. So it'd just be a game of chicken, I got to make sure I charge up. And that, what was it, like B to charge? I don't even remember.
I don't remember
either. You charge up your fireball, then you shoot your fireball, then the other person has to put in their input. If they fuck up, they just get hit by the fireball, or they could try and reflect it or block it. It like that game could have just been a fireball simulator.
Man, that'd be nice.
A Kamehameha simulator, I guess.
I do want that version of the game to come back, right? Too, actually, now I'm thinking about it. Also, Quest 64 keeps coming to my head.
Yeah, you brought that up before. I should try and emulate that at some point just to see what that was all about. Ogre Battle would also be something I'd love to see in a newer form now, especially now that I feel like that sort of game format would work perfectly for a mobile game. Not to say I would want it as a mobile game, but yeah, let's go over some news topics. I think it was immediately after we finished recording last week, we got a bunch of extra details about Death Stranding from Kojima himself. I just wanted to quickly go over what the rain in that trailer was doing and what it meant, because I completely missed this, and the underwater sequence. So first and foremost, the rain, if it hit anything unshielded, that person or object, assuming it's organic, I guess, would actually age. So if you rewatch it, apparently the guy that has his helmet off, or his whatever, hazmat suit, helmet off.
Yeah, he's definitely aging. I thought the enemies were doing that to him.
But it was actually the rain, and there are some other objects and plant forms that apparently are growing at excessive speeds as a result to
Yeah.
it. So I didn't notice that. The underwater sequence is apparently the game over state. So when you die in the game, you are then submerged underwater, and you assumedly have to do some things to become, to live again or to be resurrected. So whatever the fuck is happening in Death Stranding, that world is pretty screwed up. Mount Your Friends 3D is coming out.
Did you guys play the 2D version?
Yes. Are you familiar with this, Cookie?
Not Your Friends.
Mount Your Friends.
No, I'm not.
I don't know how to summarize this game. You
play as super buff, very well endowed Olympic athletes that are trying to climb on top of one another to reach the highest point, and your time limit reduces more and more each round to do so. It's kind of like Quap, in which you climb with each limb being corresponded to a different button. And it's got some pretty pretty wacky graphics and physics to it.
Yeah, some pretty wacky package physics, especially.
Oh, God.
Nice.
Fun game. And in
3D. Absolutely worth a Google.
In 3D, I can only imagine what you could do at this point. But... Xbox One's PUBG game preview plays on basically the very low PC graphical settings, and it's been suffering from some performance issues. This is maybe more of a PSA than anything, since we've talked about PUBG before. You may want to double check before you get it on Xbox One or any console. It's just that Xbox One is going to be the first one you could get it on. And since we brought up Ni No Kuni 2 in the past, that has been delayed to 2018.
What?
Yep. Oh, and yeah, I remember just coming across this too. So you guys will have to explain the details to me, but Disney and Fox have come to an agreement.
Mm-hmm. So basically what is happening now is Disney is buying Fox Studios, part of Fox Studios, not all of Fox Studios. This part.
$52 billion worth.
Yep. So apparently that doesn't include Fox News. So we're still going to have to deal with that. But they're getting pretty much everything back except for, like, I think news and, like, a few other, like, random things that Fox is all about.
Who would really want Fox News at this point?
Fox News
makes a lot of money. Moral complications aside, it's certainly a moneymaker, and owning it is a good way to keep lining your pockets. So,
and I believe they're just waiting for SEC regulations to, like, sign off on it. Basically say, yeah, this is okay.
So
we can finally say mutants in Marvel movies.
Yeah, like, they're going to have to reintroduce X-Men and mutants into the... like the big Marvel
MCU
combination. Yeah, exactly. Or they're going to have to reboot things.
No, it should be fine introducing mutants into Marvel movies, because in the comic series, there are mutants and humans and just your normal human.
But you just got done with the biggest event, or arguably the biggest event like pertaining to mutants. Civil War.
Oh, yeah.
So it's like, well...
No, Civil War was about Inhumans.
Inhumans?
Yeah.
And mutants, though, because they also fell under the classification.
During the Civil War, I believe during Civil War, the mutants were already gone.
Really?
Yeah, they left the planet, because I think it's like Rogue is still on planet, and Wolverine, maybe, because the cloud mist that's enveloped the Earth is basically poisoning all the mutants, so they all went to... whatever, they all went to, like, the moon or some shit. So yeah, it's just really the Inhumans that the Civil War was about.
I don't know enough about it to...
And I might be thinking of Civil War 2. Give me a sec.
There were two Civil Wars?
Yeah, Civil War 2 is also happening. I definitely just Googled Civil War and was confused as to why there weren't any more comic books.
What is this?
Oh, funny.
America. The Confederacy? I don't remember this from Marvel.
Fake news.
Holocaust never happened.
Oh, man.
The Civil War was not about slavery. At all.
It was about states' rights to own slaves.
Mm-hmm. Which is not about slavery.
which is not about slavery. It was, what's the best way I've heard it? It was about states' rights to ensure...
indentured servitude?
Economic agricultural worker success. Like, oh man, I've heard many horrible, what would you even call it? Like sanitizations of those arguments?
Yeah.
It's bad. It's bad, man.
God,
feels bad.
I fucking hate the world right now.
Okay.
Do we have anything on a lighter note?
I was going to say the Civil War was about the Superhuman Registration Act, which was a...
Oh, it's the same thing as the Incredibles, where you have to be in the database.
Basically. So we're getting part two of that.
Work is a government agent or something, right? It's so they're not freelancers, more or less.
Because
they're being treated as like rogue freelancers or vigilantes, and the government doesn't like that.
Yeah, so that was Civil War One. It was about this Superhero Registration Act rather than just the Mutant Registration Act. The Superhero one was about our Superhuman Registration Act had been a long time in the making, the logical extension of the often proposed, never passed, Mutant Registration Act.
Oh, and so this is after, quote-unquote, M-Day, when 90% of Earth's mutant population found itself spontaneously depowered.
Oh, I thought you were going to say spontaneously dead.
That's what I was thinking, too. But yeah, that was because of there's the gas that's turning all the we're normal humans to inhumans that's poisonous to mutants. Civil War.
Isn't it a little ironic then that because I'm trying to remember Civil War correctly. Captain America does not want to actually fight for America in Civil War.
Well, because like, he believes in the liberties and freedoms of.
Yes. Cap's all about the no, we don't need to really register anybody. Let's do it. And Tony's like, dude, we've done so much shit. We should probably be held accountable.
Right.
Especially after that one dude became a nuclear bomb and blew up that town.
Yeah, I mean, he's also so wealthy. He's like, yeah, they can sue me. I'll be fine.
And then Civil War II was about this inhuman that could see the future, but we weren't sure which future he could see. There's a possibility of a future, it turns out. And a lot of shit happened.
I'm done talking about Marvel.
Me too.
I'm never done talking about Marvel.
If you have comments, questions, or corrections, if they're about comics, then don't even bother.
Yeah, keep it to yourself.
Just a warning. I'm not going to read anything on that. You can write into podcast@fancyramen.com.
And if you've been enjoying the show, leave a review with us on Apple Podcast.
But most importantly, go ahead and take the time that you were going to use to write us a correction on the Marvel Universe and instead tell a friend about the podcast. It's a much better use of your time and your emails. Thank you.
Oh, gosh. There was people writing on the stream. Give me a sec.
Oh, no. I mean, not oh, no, people are writing or involved. That's probably the... Not the best thing to say, and but I don't want to miss them.
I think that does it for episode 46 of the Fancy Ramen Podcast. To those of you watching our stream, the one person watching our stream, how's it going?
Good on you.
We will be trying to do this more regularly or streaming more regularly on Sundays at 12 Central, and we're also kind of figuring out what we need to do to make the experience a little more pleasant for you as well, including break music. And having something other than just the Fancy Ramen Podcast logo.
Recycling.
Yeah. Maybe
that's
like
right.
A topic list.
You heard
it
first. Animated episodes, guys.
Ooh,
I've got
ideas.
I'm actually planning on going back into the 3D painting thing. And I want to like paint a sculpture of all three of our faces. And just have that. Terrible
that
rendition.
Super sweet.
I'm down. Just have scrolling things of... Happy. Well, as soon as Scott sends us those pictures, it'll be Happy Scott, Sad Scott. And...
Oh yeah, I'll need.
No,
right.
No, no. It was what was it? It was Happy Scott, Neutral Scott, and Disgusted Scott.
Yes.
Have a good week, everybody. We'll see you a little later for Star Wars Episode 8 Spoiler Cast.
Thanks for viewing and tuning in for this week's live cast. I think it's going to be broken down into two episodes again.
No, not this one, since we'll have the spoiler cast.
Oh, sweet. Just bam. So, good job showing up. Keep in touch.
Thanks for listening.
Love you.
Bye.
Yeah.